Hey, freedom fighters, welcome to the Active Duty Passive Income Podcast, the only place where military members, veterans, and their families learn how to build wealth through real estate investing. I'm your host, Mike Foster, and I'm here to show you how to stop wasting your benefits. Now get off your ass, step up to the firing line, and make ready for today's lesson. Shooter standby.
Hey, ADPI Nation, Kevin here. Before we start this week's show, I want to take a quick second to talk about systems. The business systems that you put in place will determine your success and your financial future. Well, I got news for you. No one teaches you these systems, not in school, and unfortunately not in the military either. That's why the ADPI team banded together to create the best and most comprehensive system that anyone out there, no matter their level, could learn from and build upon. We call it our Military Real Estate Investing Academy. Our 80 plus lesson course will take you from real estate newbie to full-fledged military real estate investor and action taker. Click the link in the show notes and use code ATOM, A-T-O-M, at checkout for $300 off today. That's code ATOM, A-T-O-M, for $300 off today. Now, let's start the show. Hey, what's going on, everybody? Kevin Brenner, host of the Active Duty Passive Income Podcast. And today we have a very special guest. His name is Joe Riley, Captain Joe Riley. But I also have a very special co-host that I want to introduce for this episode. And this is Chris Lockwood. Just got out of the Army after, Chris, how many years?
24 glorious years.
24 glorious years, transitioned fully to running short-term rentals, which is amazing for him and his family because he's got a bunch. And this is a perfect guest for everyone involved who's recording this right now, because Joe manages a whole bunch of short-term rentals everywhere. Just bought 13 homes in Savannah, Georgia. That's what he was telling right before the show. He is crushing it, him and his company that he started, doing really, really well in the short-term rental space. And this episode, guys, this is for people who are interested in short-term rentals. We're going to talk about pros, we're going to talk about cons, and we're going to talk about what it takes to do this while still serving in the military. So between Chris's experience and Joe's experience, you are going to get a ton of information here. So let's just get and jump right into this interview. Joe, welcome to the show. Can you tell our audience kind of your military background and how you got started in real estate?
Absolutely. So my final day on active duty was Wednesday of this week. So I'm newly into the reserves. I didn't quite do as long as Chris did, but still staying in the reserves, but no longer active duty. I went to University of Virginia and did ROTC there in undergrad. As soon as I graduated, I got the Rhodes Scholarship, and so I went over to Oxford, and I did my master's and doctorate at Oxford International Relations. Came back, sir. I'm an infantry officer, so was with 2ID out of Fort Lewis. I was a platoon leader there, and then my timeline was all messed up because of the grad school on the front end of things, so did a short platoon leader time, then went to Ranger School afterwards, which, as anyone in the infantry knows, is the backwards way to do it. then after Ranger School, I actually got lucky, was able to go to Afghanistan with 275, was then in Afghanistan there, which is actually when we started, the short-term rental. It was going to be a shorter deployment. So, didn't have time to put a full 12-month, tenant in the house. So my wife and I decided to just throw our house up on Airbnb in HomeAway, in Columbus, Georgia, near Fort Benning. And after we got that one up, realized that there was a huge need for this around military bases. So came back, and I wasn't quite ready to give up the revenue stream off of the Airbnb. So my wife and I lived in one room, and we rented out the other two to other people coming through. So my wife was a saint for putting up with that. And then we started getting additional Airbnbs. I then PCS to Fort Campbell with 101st. And was there. And that was kind of early 2019, right as we were getting cranking with at that point, we had probably four or five short-term rentals. The Army then threw me a big surprise just as we'd gone out and gotten a line of credit to buy some more homes. sent me to Ukraine. I thought that was going to be not only the end of the short-term rentals, but the end of my credit, because I thought there was going to be no way. No way we're going to be able to manage short-term rentals from rural Ukraine. But one of the guys I was serving with, his wife, who'd also been in the Army, but was then out, of course, was back in the U.S. And she said, well, I'd love to manage him while you're gone. So that really wound up being a kind of blessing in disguise. And our kind of secret sauce has become relying on not just veterans, but even probably to a larger degree, military spouses, who are a great latent talent pool of overqualified, underemployed folks because of how often they have to move with the military. So while I was in Ukraine, we started relying on military spouses to manage things for us. And while I was there, even though I was living in a shipping container in rural Ukraine with three other guys, we went from five homes to 35 homes.
Wow.
And then came back from Ukraine. And because of my work at Oxford, which focused on China, I was asked to go serve as a director for Indo-Pacific security on the National Security Council for President Trump. And so I spent my last 18 months or so running our counter-China policy on the National Security Council in the Pacific. And that was then when the administrations changed over in January of this year, they kind of swapped us out. So I started doing a career skill bridge program, which those people in the military who are looking to get out are familiar with. So I did a CSP with a company that we'd done a joint venture with. That company focuses on mobile home parks. We focus on short-term rentals. And so we are in the process of converting two kind of traditional mobile home parks into short-term rentals. So that's a long way of blending together military
and
real estate experience of saying that we started at, kind of in the infantry, bouncing around at different bases, and how we picked up these short-term rentals along the way.
Yeah. So, and I know, Chris, you got a question coming up here, but there's so much to unpack there, because so many people wouldn't even think to get started. So you getting started in this space was, hey, let me house hack. That's what it sounded like to me. Let me house hack. I got a couple extra rooms. What was that decision like for you? Like, why? You're an officer in the Army. Maybe you didn't need the money. Maybe you did, but it doesn't matter. Like, what was that motivation for you to just be like, I'm going to get in hospitality? Because that's what this is. This is the hospitality industry.
Right.
What was why?
Well, my wife says that I've got to learn that not every capital asset in our household has to yield a monthly return. So while we were living in our one bedroom and renting out the other two bedrooms, we had this dog that we'd bought in the UK. And I was looking at how much it had cost us to buy the dog, fly the dog back from the UK. And I said, this dog's got to start carrying her weight. So I bred her without telling my wife to another purebred dog. So in our one bedroom of our three bed house, we had 10 puppies and two dogs.
What?
And then, I noticed Rachel traveled every week, Monday through Thursday. And then when she came home, we just rode around together. So I thought, she doesn't need her car. So she came home one weekend. She goes, where's my car? And I said, I leased it to another guy in the military. And so here we were living in our one bedroom of our three bedroom house, piled in with 10 puppies, and I leased her car.
And you're still married.
Yeah, I am. So, I should be an advertisement for any guy out there whose wife's, or either other way around, who's kind of upset with them for, whatever shenanigans they pull. But it was absolutely house hacking, trying to bring in some additional revenue streams. And then we'd had some long-term rentals. And so when we had our first Airbnb, we already had six or seven long-term rentals. And I converted all of those just because I saw how much better the cash flow was on the short-term side than the long-term side. Mm-hmm. And that the types of properties that work well as short-term rentals are more the sorts of properties that people might want to live in. And as a result, you have greater home price appreciation. I saw it as a play to both increase cash flow while operating as a rental, but also be able to take advantage of a little bit more appreciation that you sometimes miss out on your kind of traditional rental properties that don't always appreciate as well as properties that would be attractive for, owner-occupied, single-family homes.
I'm jumping real quick. What were the challenges when you took those long-term rentals and flipped those to short-term? Because that's more than just getting one tenant out and bringing one in. There's a lot of work that goes into prepping one of those for a short-term rental. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, the changes you have to make are, one, kind of improving the finishings often, because there's different expectations on the short-term side versus the long-term side. And then, you know, I think maybe this isn't as big a problem for people in the military who have to pick up their whole life and uproot and move every 18 months anyway. But taking a house from zero to 100 is not an easy process in terms of linens, towels, cooking pans and pots and bowls and, you know, toilet paper and soap and shampoo, all these things, shower curtains, things that you don't ever think about putting in a long-term rental, right? That all of a sudden becomes absolutely essential for a short-term rental. So it's really boils down to, you know, three things if you're going to transition. One, thinking through what sort of rehab you need to do to bring the property up to the level that's expected of a short-term rental. Two, thinking about all the furnishings and fixtures and amenities that have to go in to a short-term rental that aren't in a long-term rental. And thirdly, then the kind of mindset shift of going from truly passive of, I'm going to, you know, put a 12-month person in there and I'll hear from them, you know, once every 6 months when something goes wrong, to I'm going to turn this thing, you know, twice a week and I'm going to hear from them, you know, every time they check in and out. So I think those are the three, you know, changes: upgrade to the, you know, underlying asset, addition of new fixtures and finishings, and then a kind of mindset shift regarding the frequency of turnover and the level of expectations that come from the tenants.
And I'd say that, Joe, and I'm sure you'd agree with me here, that a lot of this stuff can be systematized. You know, the first time, second time, you know, you're gonna drag your knuckles on it. Oh, this is, you know, but the third time you have this list. And you can say, okay, this is exactly what I need to buy. This is the furniture I'm going to buy. And eventually all your short-term rentals, they might start looking the same with the base level of furniture and the base level of service that you want to provide, and really the base level of value that you want to provide. And the cool thing about short-term rentals is that you can go and look at the market that you're in and look directly at what your competitors are offering and offer different services and effectively put more value, whether you're making your place kid friendly, pet friendly, you know, sleeps 12 plus, what would do what other people aren't doing, find the data, do what other people aren't doing. And because of that, you're rewarded with, you know, a more exclusive property. And because it's more exclusive, you can charge more for it. And that is something that, you know, in the long-term game, because you're not putting those extra furnishings in there, it's usually like, you know, you kind of got to go more with the market rent based on just how your place looks and where it is. But you can even add more value in a short-term rental by just putting cooler stuff in there.
Absolutely. So a lot of things that kind of threads to follow on that one. One, in terms of the list of things that go in the house, you know, so the first house we put together was just our own furniture, right? The second house we put together was like grandma's furniture and aunts and uncles, and then like whatever, and you know, and then the third house was like, you know, what can we find at Goodwill and thrift stores and whatever else. And then by the fourth house, we were trying to, you know, start to get from box stores. And then by like 5 or 6, 7 or 8, we started working with Wayfair and trying to get like some different packages and stuff that we could fit in. Up to today, we have two warehouses in East Tennessee, you know, large warehouses. And we buy out entire hotels worth of furniture. So if a hotel's going out of business, we go in and at pennies on the dollar, show up with transfer trucks, break down all the stuff, load it in the transfer trucks, pull it back to our warehouses, store it there. And then now when we get a new house and we send out to set it up, we put everything in that truck that's going to the house, down to the toilet paper, soap, shampoo, trash bags, you name it. So when that ramp comes down on the truck at the house, we can have a house fully furnished, 90% of the way there in about 8 hours, 8 to 12 hours. So that's, you know, so as you get larger, right? I mean, that's not, those kind of efficiencies of scale don't come until a later point. So that's on that piece. In terms of differentiating your product, and the kind of ability to kind of get more out of a short-term rental versus a long-term rental. Absolutely. Long-term rental, you're kind of, you know, at the mercy of the market. On the short-term side, I mean, we take over properties that we manage. We have yet to take over a property that we didn't increase their revenue at least 30%. Just because there are so many, when you think through pricing, when you think through photos, when you think through the layout of the home, how it's designed, how many you sleep, you know, there are, even without changing anything about the physical home, there are so many things you can do to extract more revenue and value. And let's be honest, short-term rentals, like most everything in real estate, is a high fixed cost business where, you know, it's a revenue game. Sure, you have a little bit more on the cleaning, but the cleaning is paid by the guest, right? In fact, we charge more on the cleaning than what we charge the guests, so we make money off the cleaning. So, you know, it is the marginal costs are minimal, so it's a revenue game. And then the third thing I would say, so, you know, on even with an existing property, by putting in place the best management techniques from a digital side, a pricing standpoint, pushing out across multiple listings, changing how you turn over, changing the way you describe the property digitally, photos you use. When you're looking to acquire a home, we look for things that most people don't want, right? We have octagon houses and geodesic domes and like ranch houses that have got 15 different rooms that don't make any sense, you know, but for us is perfect, right? Because each one of those rooms,
like eclectic,
is,
you know,
right, is another sleeping area. So no one wants to live in maybe some people want to live in a geodesic home. Probably not. A geodesic home is a great thing to go see for a weekend or a week. If you know how about the echoing in geodesic homes, you don't want to live in a geodesic home. We look for things, you know, next to commercial buildings, right? In bad school districts, because no one in a short term rental cares what the school district is. So you can get properties, at a much more affordable rate, by buying things that have aspects of them that would make them less attractive to a 12-month tenant or an owner, you know, somebody who's going to be owner occupied, but that make no difference or in sometimes are pluses for people who are coming in for a weekend or a week.
So you said you take over and increase revenue. So are you getting some years from houses that were already Airbnbs before and managing them, or do you purchase them, or how does that work?
So we have three types of properties in our portfolio. We started out by obviously buying and owning our own properties. When we would run out of capital, then we started doing a rental arbitrage model where we come in and sign a 3 to 5 year lease and then turn around and sublease on Airbnb and VRBO. Obviously, that's all written in the agreement. It's not that we're pulling one over on the landlord. Beneficial to them, they get a guaranteed tenant for 5 years, at market rents, no vacancy, and we take care of most all the maintenance ourselves. So it's very hands off. And then they don't have to pay a management company if they don't want to. So that's rental arbitrage number two. And then some of the landlords that we were leasing from started coming to us and said, wait a minute, how are you paying your rent and still making money? Mm-hmm. And they said, well, why don't you just manage some of our properties for us? So then we started managing, and now we have three types of properties: those we own, those we run rental arbitrage on, and those we manage. Within that management pool, we really have a couple of different kind of client bases that we work with. One are increasingly a lot of military folks as they're looking to PCS. They bought their house on a VA loan. You know, maybe they don't want to go across the country with their furniture, and they just say, hey, rather start from scratch. I'll leave all my furniture in the house. Don't have to pay anything else more for it. You all take over the house, start managing it for me. So that's one thing that we have started doing. Another group of people that we manage for, you know, you've got a vacation home, you know, it's the kind of typical story. You got a vacation home, you use it a few weeks a year, don't use it the other time, you want someone to manage. And then we have some that are just straight up investors who say, look, I don't ever care if I go see the home or not, right? You just tell me where to go buy. I'm looking for cash flow. And so we go buy the home for them, and we can do full a la carte, right? We can come in, find the home, renovate the home for them, furnish the home out of our warehouse, get it up and running as a short-term rental, manage it, send them a check once a month. And building that vertical integration capacity has now, we're working with larger institutional investors who will say, hey, I've got, you know, one of our investors is, you know, we've got to buy him $15 million worth of houses by the end of the year. And so, you know, that's allowed us to kind of start targeting. And with these larger institutional investors, we're going after multifamily now. We're going after mm-hmm. portfolios of single family. So all of that to say that we do buy some houses that are already short-term rentals, but mostly it's someone who is managing, Chris, to your question, they're managing their property. You know, we took over one the other day. They were bringing in $2,500 a month, right? Kind of happy with it, a little bit frustrated with the headache. We took over, they're generating on average 5,800, I think it's like 5,850 a month right now. And they were way underpricing their asset. They were only on one platform. They weren't, you know, maximizing, you know, kind of, there's just like a ton of things that they weren't doing. They were, and we were able to kind of come in and help them turn it around. So
that's awesome.
Yeah, I don't want to take over for you, Kevin, but you brought up the pricing, and I know what we use. So what's your go-to to set that perfect rate, that nightly rate for your houses? Because you're all over the country. So, you know, that's something you can't just look on Airbnb and go, okay, that house is this much, I'm going to charge that. What do you use to come up with your pricing?
So we have a lot of different proprietary thing. I can't take credit for it. My wife, who I met in Oxford, and she got her doctorate over there as well. She works for McKinsey as her kind of full-time job. She's way smarter than I am. She runs most of the pricing, so I'll give a dumbed-down version of it, and that is that we use Price Labs as our software. My general intuition, which is a little bit counter, you know, and then Price Labs is basically just, it is that. It's just a template, right? And then you can put in, there's 1,000 different variables, and you know, in terms of minimum night stay, base price, throttle up, throttle down. There are so many kind of different, you know, TTPs that you can use on how to manage that pricing software. So, you know, don't think that you're just going to go get Price Labs and get the best results, because Price Labs is just a tool. You've got to put the inputs in it to make it work. Mm-hmm. But a couple basic ideas. One, so many people that we take over for, and I had a new client call us the other day, and he's panicking because he has no reservations for August. Most people, when they look at their calendar, they look forward, which is the worst thing they could do. They should look backwards, right? When we set pricing, we never look forwards. We always look backwards. What does that mean? If we look back over the past 1, 2, 3, 4 months and we've had good occupancy and we have no reservations on the calendar moving forward, we don't touch pricing. In fact, I see that as a great opportunity, because if someone shows up in Huntsville, Alabama, or Montgomery, or Columbus, Georgia, or wherever else, and there are a group of electricians who need a place to stay for 6 weeks, we're the only option in town, right? Because everybody else got anxious, was trying to get that weekend booking 2 weeks from now. So now, great, they've got a booking 2 weekends from now, and they can't take a long-term reservation. And long-term reservations are really some of the most profitable. So look backwards, not forwards. Don't sell yourself short, right? People want to strive for this 90-100% occupancy. No, if you're running 90-100% occupancy, you're leaving a lot of money on the table. Mm-hmm. So, 9 times out of 10, when someone asks me about their property, they ask, what do you think my occupancy will be? And what are you charging? As a nightly rate, right? That's what they're fixated on. And of course, you can back into those numbers. But what I tell them is, all you should care about is revenue. We don't look at occupancy or average daily rate. We look at what is the average monthly revenue on a property. And that's what we're driving for. So I tell the bank, right? I used to, when I was first having to figure out how to convince bankers to bankroll what we do, which, because they hate it, because there's no 12-month lease that they can benchmark to, is I would say, would I rather rent my house for 30 nights for $100 a night or one night for $3,000 a night, right?
How do you become a successful military real estate investor? It starts with having a strong squad and trustworthy mortgage broker by your side. Hey guys, Kevin here. I wanted to take a quick break from the show to help you fill out your real estate investment dream team. Whether you're looking to fund your first VA house hack, close on an out-of-state turnkey investment, or just have a conversation with a lender who speaks your language, make sure you reach out to ADPI's team of qualified mortgage pros. With a full range of tailored lending options, our team is standing by to provide active duty service members, veterans, and military families just like you all the advice and resources you need to close on your first or next investment opportunity. Click the link in this episode's show notes or simply text DEAL, D-E-A-L, to 33777 to get connected today. Now, let's get back to the show.
And, you know, and that is just something that does not make sense to the bankers, but is absolutely how we've built our business and how we are able to come in and help people. And some of the people we find that we're able to help most. So we have a full service package where we run everything, right? You just get a check at the end of the month. And then we have a digital only package because really our strength is in the digital piece. We have a 24/7 call center, run all of, you know, we run all of the digital package, can push it out over the listings. And so what we love doing is partnering with someone who they're great. They've got set up a great house. They have great customer service. Furnishings are great. They got great cleaners, but they just don't understand, or at least don't have the scale to justify all of the price, you know, software investments that we have. And so we run the digital game for them and let them continue to do everything great on the ground.
So, Joe, we've talked a lot about the pros of short-term rentals. I got a question for you, though. What are your thoughts on executive rentals? Because a lot of the cons are, it depends on your market, right? And in some markets, short-term rentals are very much regulated. And the government says, no, you can't do that. Or you need a permit, and there's a two-year waiting list to get a permit for this. What are some ways, some creative ways that some of our military real estate investor listeners out there who might be in one of those markets, how can they still kind of partake in this and not break the law?
Right. Well, a lot of it's going to depend on what the local regulations are, right? But one of the baselines, as you mentioned, is the minimum stay requirement. So you can set it up as an executive rental. An executive rental, you know, you can still market it on Airbnb and VRBO. We work a lot with insurance. We're the preferred vendor for a lot of the insurance companies. So let's say your house burns down, has water damage, insurance company has to put you up somewhere. We do a lot of business with that. So that's another way to kind of get really lucrative, you know, month-long, two-month-long, 4 or 6-month-long bookings. So it's almost certainly a minimum stay requirement. Some cities will allow you to get an exception, right? You can get an exemption and go apply for an exception to the, you know, to the regulations. And then, you know, to be completely candid, and I want to be very clear, I'm not, you know, endorsing or encouraging anyone to do this, but, you know, depending on the market, the level of enforcement is, you know, very different. And so we have in some markets, like if you're in Nashville, and you're running a short-term rental and you're not, they're going to be at your doorstep in about a week. If you're in another city, you know, that says on the surface, we don't allow these, but doesn't really enforce the rules that much. And some cities, you know, have a very, if you talk with the zoning folks, have a fairly don't ask, don't tell kind of policy, which is that if they understand that there's a demand for these and it boosts tourism in their city, and they understand that there's tax revenue, even if it's not permitted, right? They still get tax revenue off of it in many instances. So in those instances, sometimes if your neighbors aren't complaining and they're not after the local folks to come get you, no one's upset, no harm, no foul, right? But if you're in a city that doesn't allow it before I started, I would absolutely have a very candid conversation with my neighbors and be like, is this going to bother you, right? And if it is, and the neighbors are going to be upset, don't even try it.
Yeah, I guess I never understood why neighbors get upset. I mean, I can understand if like people are partying super, super hard, but the most successful short-term rental operators don't allow any of that nonsense. And there's so many strategies to prevent that from happening. And maybe we can talk about that in the last couple minutes here, how, you know, what are ways perhaps that you list your properties to prevent, like, you know, because we're talking about the general cons of short-term rentals and people think, oh, they're going to destroy my house or they're going to, you know, throw this raging party or they're going to break stuff or they're going to do all of this. You know, what are some ways that you know of to prevent that as an operator?
So several things you can do. One, minimum stay requirements, which will help with that. You know, people don't book it for a week if they're looking to throw a rager, right? Being very careful of local bookings, right? Because where you have your biggest parties or people in the local area who book it, allowing people to book who have no previous reviews or have bad reviews, obviously. So a fair amount of it's screening on the front end, requiring a picture ID, you know, government ID to be sent in. That's part of it. On the damage side, you can, you know, then once they arrive, you know, ring doorbells, noise aware, different kind of sound monitoring devices. Make sure no video cameras inside the homes because that will get you in big trouble. But you can put a ring doorbell on the outside and you can put a noise monitoring system inside. Airbnb and VRBO both will now allow you to cancel penalty free if you suspect any sort of party concerns. So you don't have to worry about getting in trouble with that. That's a new policy change. And then, you know, if you want to be uber careful, right, you have someone come check in. You know, they check in at 3 or 4 o'clock. You swing by at 6 or 7 o'clock in the evening or have your cleaner or somebody else do. And, you know, and you can do that. In terms of, you know, damage to the house itself, there's going to be damages, right? I mean, you long-term rental, short-term rental, whatever else is going to have wear and tear on the property. That's why the government allows you to, you know, claim depreciation. But I actually find that the short-term rentals have less wear and tear than long-terms because you've got somebody going in there once a week, twice a week. If there are issues, particularly if you're remote, right? If you're a soldier and you've PCS'd, you got a long-term tenant, your management company is not going in there until the end of 12 months, right? And for all you know, they've completely trashed the place. So you'll have your repairs and maintenance budget will be nothing for 12 months. And then all of a sudden you've got, you know, $6,000 worth of repairs and maintenance that you have to do. Whereas on the short-term side, there'll be $200 this month, $300. You know, it's like more even because there is wear and tear, but you're addressing it more proactively.
And so one of the bane of my existence in the short-term game is maintenance and cleaning. How do you manage that, mm-hmm. and how do you find reliable people to keep on staff?
Oh, that's the challenge that everyone faces, which is why I said that I love the digital package where if you're a local operator and you've got a great ground game between cleaners and maintenance people, you know, we're going to add the most value on the digital side. Maintenance is a little bit easier. You know, you can find some good contractors and stuff. I mean, the cleaners, if you've got a good cleaner, good golly, whatever you've got to do to keep them happy, because that is so important. I wish I could have some silver bullet to help on the cleaning side. It's purely a going out and finding good people who are reliable and compensating them to do a good job. And it's in the cleaning game. There's a lot of other opportunities for them, particularly Chris, like you, if you're in a vacation market where there's a lot of demand for cleaners, you know, it's kind of, you get what you pay for a lot of times.
Yeah. And it's so dependent too, because you're going to need that cleaner to come in. And if you right. don't have a backup or a backup to the backup, and you know, you don't have someone you can call because yep. they can't make it or whatever, then you can really hurt your reviews and kind of puts you in a pickle. So there's definitely some contingencies that you got to have on there. Well, Joe, we are we're coming down to the end here, and like always, we want to run you through our bonus round, and this has been extremely, extremely helpful. What you've shared with us on the short-term rental side is amazing. And just the process of being able to help military families when they PCS, instead of just saying, oh, well, I'm just going to sell my home. You don't have to do that. You can still keep it as an mm-hmm. asset. And if there's anything that anyone has learned so far is that Joe knows how to turn things into assets, whether they're dogs or cars or or anything. I mean, this dude has figured it out. So, and that's really the key, right? We want to collect more assets than we have liabilities. So, Joe, this has been really cool. And we're going to ask you the same 4 questions that we ask every single one of our guests. And question number 1, Joe, is what book or software has really been helping you crush it lately?
So, Price Labs. So, you know, if you're on the software side, Price Labs, and you're in the short-term rental industry, that's what we've been using.
And that software helps you, you know, automatically adjust prices based on the inputs you put in, based on Correct. Various market indicators and time and everything like that. So how does it work? You put your numbers in and it kind of spits something out for you and then you can adjust?
Well, you put your baseline conditions in terms of base price, minimum night stay, you know, kind of pattern at which last minute stays, orphan stays, how all these different kind of pricing algorithms work. So you kind of set the baselines, but then you have to monitor it, right? We're in every day going through and tweaking and providing manual overrides on different properties. So it's not a set it and forget it purely. There's a lot of ongoing maintenance for it.
Right, right. But it's kind of keeping your pace as you go and you know, the end of the day is the software helps you create a massive efficiency so you don't get stuck Correct. In a rut where you're underpricing yourself and you don't even know it. So that's a really, really important piece. Question number two, who's your biggest hero and why?
Be my grandfather. I carry his briefcase with me wherever I go. He carried it for 50 years. He was grew up a farmer, kind of true entrepreneur, and wound up, getting a football scholarship to college and then working his way up through a factory and wound up owning kind of plants across the country. That's definitely my role model.
Oh, man, that's awesome. So you have his briefcase.
Yeah, I do. I carry it with me everywhere I go.
It's awesome, man. Because no one really carries briefcases anymore. So you're like,
no, and it's the old suitcase style. Yeah, the hardback. It's like the little flip things, and then it goes up.
What do you keep in there? That's what I want to know. Like M&Ms or something.
Yeah, my laptop, which is like an appendage of my body, and any other kind of notebooks or paperwork I've got. So
okay, all right. That's so old school. I love it though. Yeah. All right. Question number three for you, Joe. What do you like to do for fun?
So I grew up hunting and riding horses. So that's what I love. I would love to get back to whenever I've got a little bit more time now that I only have the one job. And we've got a 10-month-old who's in the room next door. And so I look forward to taking him hunting and riding horses. And right now just playing with him.
Yeah, that's awesome, man. All right. This is the big question for you, Joe. The one we ask every single guest, and you dropped a lot of nuggets so far, so that might be challenging. Don't feel like you have to come up with brand new ones. But if there's a listener out there listening to you that is like, you just lit their light bulb and you were like, oh my God, I need to do short-term rentals. Like, this is what I was made for. What are some three nuggets of wisdom for that military real estate investor to get started with their own short-term rentals? What three nuggets do you have? And then we might move on to Chris, because Chris, you started your short-term rentals, and I'd love to hear your opinion on some nuggets as well.
Yeah. This is specific to just short-term rentals, but in general, take advantage of the VA loan that you have as you move from base to base. The VA loan is most valuable to you if you don't just sell the asset right every time you move, if you hold it. And so that would be one, use your VA loan and hold it. Two would be, this is specific to folks in the military. If you've got the beauty of a short-term rental is, let's say you've got a couple month long training rotation or you're getting ready to deploy, you can throw it up on Airbnb for a couple. That's how I started this whole business, right? Is because I was going to be gone for a short period of time, not long enough to do a long-term rental. So take advantage. Don't just let your house sit vacant there. So that would be, kind of nugget number two. And then nugget number three is, don't undervalue your asset when you throw it up on Airbnb. That's the biggest mistake that I see people make over and over and over again. They're so fixated on trying to get to 100% occupancy that they consistently underprice and they're selling themselves short. So those would be my three pieces of advice. Take advantage of your VA loan and fully maximize it. Don't just sell your home every time you move from base to base. Make it a cash flowing asset. If you're going to be gone for a short period of time, that's a great way to dip your toes in the water at no cost to explore a short-term rental. Mm-hmm. And then three, if you are running a short-term rental, don't undervalue your asset. Don't try to achieve 100% occupancy. Really be disciplined on your pricing.
All right. That's awesome. Chris, do you have some nuggets that you'd like to share?
I mean, Joe nailed it. The only thing I would really add to that is, know the market you're going into. And don't try and reinvent the wheel there. You know, if you're in the city, don't try and have a cabin theme. If you're in the mountains, don't try and have a city theme. Just go with what works. There might be a thousand other ones in that area, but if it's on there, I promise you it will book. It will.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think a lot of people get in their head about this too. And I had a short-term rental here in DC that I partnered up with another member of the community. And, you know, we did really, really well. And I'll tell you why we did well is because we focused and we made this entire rental. It was a duplex and there was a long-term tenant upstairs and the short-term, the one bedroom downstairs where the owner lived and he deployed. And so it was vacant, right? And we made it dog friendly. We redid the backyard. Mm-hmm. You know, we put the sweat equity into it. We, you know, made everything about dogs because people love dogs in that market outside of DC and Alexandria. People love dogs and all the bars and restaurants were all dog friendly. So people loved it, you know, and we put the little, you know, doggy bag station outside where people can clean up after themselves, which they seldomly did, but we tried, but at the end of the day, in like 6 months, it made $15,000. So like, can you argue with that math? And you really can't, because you wouldn't be able to get that, you know, normally. So it is a extremely lucrative business and people think it's really, really difficult, but the software solutions that are out there right now with the software and the listing and like Joe was talking about the digital management that you can do, it really makes things much, much easier. It's not like you're physically handing a key to someone. I mean, when I was doing it, and Chris, you can probably relate to this, you know, yeah, I would communicate with the guest when they're coming in and when they're leaving, but while they're staying, I mean, unless they had a question, it was fine. And we'd have people stay there for 4 weeks.
Yeah, now a lot of the communication, you know? I'm not even the one really doing it. It's a preset email or text message that automated. Just as soon as something triggers, it's sending them a message. And I've had people have a conversation with the software and it's great.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. And you know, and you're there if you need to be there. But at the end of the day, I was there. It was on my brain about maybe slightly more than my long-term rentals, slightly. But for that little bit of extra time and attention, the profits were unbelievable. So it's something that I've been kicking around and getting back into. And Joe, maybe I'll have you convert my quadplexes into some short-term rentals for me and
love to
figure it out.
And that's what last thing I would just say is, you know, a couple things we'd be happy to help service members and members of the community with. One, you know, if you're thinking about turning your house into a short-term rental, happy for you to reach out to us. We can kind of give you a general kind of thought on what the revenue might look like on it, give you some tips, happy to help out people, and certainly manage it for them if they want us to. And secondly, if you're looking to get out of the military, we have a very robust career skill bridge program. So we've got, I think right now, 5 interns who are coming through on that program. So if you're looking to come, you know, you're wanting to get in it, whether you want to do it for yourself or you're interested in coming launching a market, we bring interns in, they come work with us for anywhere from a couple, you know, month or two to 6 months, however long they have from the military. And then if they want to, you know, we'll go plant them in a market. You know, if you wanted to live in Vail, Colorado, or Destin or wherever else, you come run through the internship program, then we'll get you set up in one of those markets and get you off to the races on, you know, launching your own market. So that's another thing that
that's
we're
fantastic.
Happy to help people
guys,
with, so.
please take advantage of that. Joe, where can folks get in touch with you if they're interested in that program or they just want to get in touch with you? What's the best way?
Then go to our website, which is patriotfamilyhomes.com. There'll be a contact us form, or they can also email me personally. My personal email is just joe@patriotfamilyhomes.com.
That is excellent, man. So, guys, you heard it here first. Please, please, please email Joe. You know, our guests give their information out because they want to be contacted. If they didn't, they wouldn't give their information out. So, you know, you people listen to these podcasts and you know, I know it from being on other podcasts. I have people reach out to me and I have calls and it's just, it's fun. And that's what this is about. That's why you are listening to this podcast right now, because you want to learn and you want to take action. Joe just gave you the key to taking action between the SkillBridge program that they're offering, plus just being able to talk to him, plus being able to talk to his team and figuring out if this is even right for you. That little action step could be the thing that starts it for you. It could be the catalyst to your future success listening to this show. So thank you so much, Joe. This was such a really enlightening episode, and I'm sure we'll be talking soon.
Thanks.
And thank you, Chris.
Had a blast.
Outstanding. That was an awesome episode. Thanks so much to our special guest, and thanks to you for listening. If you haven't hit the subscribe button yet, make sure you go and do that. Or schedule a call with us by texting ADPI to 444-999 or checking out our website at www.activedutypassiveincome.com to find out how you can get started on your financial freedom journey today. I'll see you guys next week.